Hello, everyone. Welcome into Locked On Suns, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Today, as always, I'm joined by my co-host, Brennan Kleeman, both right for Bright Side of the Sun. Brennan, how you doing today?
I am doing well. I fortunately did not have to suffer through that game in person like you did last night. 22-point loss at home to a team with similar record to the Suns is not a good way to continue this tough schedule, and so I'm a little disappointed, but excited about the draft and all the rest of that. So kind of in between right now.
Yeah, I think I'm in the same area you are right now. I mean, DC moved us down last night with all the Knicks media there. So me and Gerald and the rest of the people were down there courtside. But unfortunately, we weren't able to see, like you said, a good show. The Suns at one point were down by 28 points, and it really wasn't that close at all to begin with after the first 6 or so minutes. They kept it close, albeit in the first half. It was a four-point halftime lead, but really after the first few minutes and once Devin Booker received his first flagrant foul in the third quarter, the wheels just completely flew off of the tires for the Suns. So just real quick, I know we're probably just going to barely touch on the game because it's really followed the same similar script as the Indiana game. Just real quickly, any thoughts that you took away from that game? Because for me, I think continues to impress is Josh Jackson.
Yeah, you look really good, and I thought it was an interesting clip that you tweeted from him. It was him. He just continues to be really on his learning process, and you can see it on the court that he's getting better consistently and taking big strides night to night. It's really, really good to see continued his scoring last night. But I think the real thing for me, not that it obviously in big loss like this comes down to one thing, but I think you can't go understated how weird it was to not only have Greg Monroe starting again after he's really was out of the lineup for quite a while and now in the past few games has come back with Lynn battling an injury, but to also not have Tyson playing and have the rotation just really unlike any other game all season. I think that's one way where it was different than Indiana, just because I think having a change like that can really make a big difference, and I think that kind of tumbled down a little bit too.
I know Jackson had a really fast start to the games like he usually does off the bench. I think he had 10 points in his first 6 or so minutes, and then after the first half he had a very strong first half. I think he had 13 points in total. In the second half we didn't see Jackson until almost garbage time at that point. I think it was late in the third quarter. So, like you said, those rotations were kind of confusing to me. I know he likes to get Warren going in the second half, but what's your thoughts? I know we saw actually a lot last night before Booker got ejected, but him, Warren, and Jackson, and Booker at point, I guess, we can touch on that as well. Booker started his first career game at point guard last night, so point book officially was activated, but as we saw last night, it did not go well. So, real quickly, your thoughts on Booker at point guard and also just Jackson, Warren, and Booker all together and how it's fitting together.
Yeah, I would. That's another lineup that I would hope we could see more, especially if Josh Jackson continues to shoot the ball well. He was 1 of 2 from three last night. I think that's going to be the key. That's been all season long. That's been what Jay Triano points to as far as why he cuts Troy Daniels' minutes to Booker's minutes at point guard. He really hasn't played to anyone else as far as like wings go in that two spot. So I think that's going to be a bigger sign is where they can find the shooting. Obviously, it is not usually that guy, but he made 2 of 3 last night. Maybe he kind of takes that on a little bit more in the second half of the year. That would be a big change. But Triano is really rigid in his thinking, some of that stuff, I think, though, just like we haven't seen Marquese Chriss or Dragan Bender play center all that much this year, for similar reasons. He wants to see certain things from them before that they're really even allowed to handle that opportunity. I think it's a similar situation for Booker and Jackson. They're not going to be able to expand their game to include new things until they show that they can handle it. And I think that it'll continue to be Daniels next to Booker for the reason. But I have no problem with Jackson's been making most of his opportunities, and I think it's a role that he's kind of perfect for, that little kind of spark plug at the end of the first quarter and here and there throughout the rest of the game. It's been really good to see.
Now, I know it was a blowout loss last night, and obviously people on the bright side of the sun really across Phoenix Suns Twitter last night were freaking out about Point Booker and how it didn't go as well. Booker got ejected after his little skirmish with Enes Kanter. We'll touch on a little later in the podcast, but how do you think that went? He had 3 assists, 3 turnovers, and I think about 24 minutes. But he looked, to me, he looked very passive as far as the first half went. And maybe he was trying to be a little too much like a point guard, so to say, as far as trying to get everyone involved instead of just being his usual self. Did you get that read as well?
Yeah, I mean, you and I were talking before the game about, I kind of felt pretty comfortable saying that Booker was going to be able to really take advantage of his matchup against the Knicks starting point guard, Jarrett Jack. That's maybe 7 years ago would have been a tough trip for Booker, but Jack's been, he wasn't in the league really last year and kind of in and out and looks his age this year, to say the least. I thought that was a matchup that he would have. He doesn't have an athletic advantage in many matchups, but I thought for sure he would be able to take advantage last night, and he, of course, didn't really do so. I've noticed that all year, though, kind of with him, whenever he is handling the ball full-time like that, he really seems to take it seriously, that switch of role where he's looking to set his teammates up and be that playmaker and distributor. And then when this changes and the lineup changes, then he kind of settles back into that scoring role. So maybe it'll just be a matter of him adjusting his mindset in those situations, especially, I mean, to start the game, you want Booker to be taking shots and playing aggressively. You know what I mean? I think that's going to be a change for him, where even though he does have the ball in his hands more, he needs to come out in those first 6 minutes and really control the game, because he can, and he's done it all year. But I think maybe just that switch is a little bit uncomfortable for him right now.
No, I think obviously I was, and I think you were, as far as point book and having that go into plan. I think we were both on the bandwagon as far as having that go into action, so to say. So what's your thoughts as far as Booker at point guard and the lineup change that we talked? We'll just have one final thought from both of us on this. But I think I'm a big fan of Booker moving forward, and obviously can't overreact about one game, one blowout loss, but do you want to see Treon at least stay with this line moving forward instead of like we saw it early on in November at Chicago? He started Dragan Bender in the first half, then he hasn't started a game since outside of Chris being injured.
Yeah, I hope that they do it, and I would expect, I mean, I understand it didn't look great last night, but said, I think, I don't know, one of the recent episodes I had said that lineup change might be the best and most logical one, just because for no other reason but that Daniels has been a better player than Isaiah Cannon or Tyler Ulis this year. And so if you want your guy, your most productive and talented players on the court as much as possible all together, that was the quickest and easiest way to make that happen. And I haven't seen anything, didn't see anything last night, despite the struggles of the starting lineup, to think that that's not true. And so I see no reason for it to change. I think tomorrow in Houston, which I'm sure we'll hit quickly at the end of the show, but Chris Paul and James Harden are an answer for them defensively on this roster. So I would say, at least for tomorrow, I would expect the Suns to continue to try to just battle as an offensive team. And the best way to do that, once again, is Booker and Daniels.
Yeah, I agree with you there, and I believe that it really should go and contain with this point book experiment, because at this point in the season, we've seen now the Suns maybe have their last final realistic stretch they could pick up multiple wins in over his next 5 games, and after that, it's a murderous row of teams over the next 6 or so weeks, so it's going to be a really rough stretch, and at this point, you might as well help organically tank if you're going to have Booker try this out at point guard, see if he can take that Harden-like arc in his career. So I'm a fan of it, and even though it was a blowout loss last night, I think they really should just continue to expand on move forward and look to try variations with Jackson and Warren and Daniels and see how it all comes together. But real quick, we're going to touch on the Enes Kanter, Devin Booker skirmish that happened last night. It was in the third quarter. Booker at that point had a flagrant foul, so he had a technical, and Enes Kanter, he blocked his shot at the rim. he was going for a layup, and then Cantor got right in his face, trash talking his face. Booker didn't like that, so he pushed him in the back as he was walking away, and Greg Monroe also got in Cantor's face. And after the game, and that led to Booker being ejected and Cantor getting a technical, but after the game, Enes Kanter, we know he's had his issues with LeBron James too. He's called out him before, but last night, here's Enes Kanter's Twitter account. He said, "Hold that quote unquote L kid. Talk to me nice or don't talk to me at all." So, what's your thoughts on?
Yeah, he tweeted at Booker like pumping up the crowd.
Yeah, with the L in between. So what's your, and then I guess I can read off right now about Jared Dudley. Dudley also replied back and he said, "You talking like you in the playoffs, bruh. You're not Westbrook, bruh. Don't let that Knicks hype fool you. We know what you are, a fake tough guy who liked Twitter. We already saw LeBron sun you." So just what's your thoughts on Cantor taking that to social media off the court?
I just think at a certain point, there's a limit to how much I care about what someone has to say on the internet if they're not successful at what they do. So, I mean, yeah, I'll listen to Joel Embiid or LeBron James talk trash on social media, but somebody on a losing team that happened to be another losing team, I'm not really too worried about Enes Kanter coming for Devin Booker.
Yeah, definitely. And like Dudley tweeted afterwards, yeah, Kanter tweeted about Dudley's form as far as him being in shape. He's like, he has a retirement body already. And then Dudley replied saying that Kanter's one of the worst pick and roll defenders in the league, and the NBA fraternity knows that. And he kind of got on there, and Kanter didn't reply. So just a little fun back and forth jabs in a season that is kind of lost right for the Phoenix Suns. This is what we were talking about on Locked On Suns. So we're back to this point. I know the Suns have really gone on a nosedive over the past few weeks. There was very faint and very lasted probably maybe 3 or 4 days as far as playoff hopes between the players. And after that happened, they've gone 8 of 10 or 2 of 8 cents over the last 10. So just how are the Suns going to get out of this rut? Because last night I was talking to Gerald Bourget of Fanside, and he was telling me as far as the Booker looking really frustrated with the roster, and just the guys looked really frustrated and out of sync last night. Just how did the Suns, especially with the league's youngest rotation, snap out of this, especially with a really tough schedule coming up?
The schedule's decent for them over the next few games. They did have a tough stretch here and didn't do well at all. They've lost 6 of 7. And they have Houston tomorrow. That'll probably be another loss. But after that, Memphis, Dallas, Utah, Charlotte, LA, all in a row. I mean, they're gonna have a chance to win all those games. That's for them to get back on track heading into the All-Star break. But I mean, I think that this is just the reality of the team. I mean, Marquese Chris is battling back from injury. That doesn't help. Alex Len doing the same. Hurts the rotation like we talked about earlier, but I mean, this is a lottery team, and they have been a lottery team despite Devin Booker's improvements and winning some games single-handedly earlier in the year. I think this is pretty accurate as far as his actual performance level is and will be.
Now, on to that point, though, when Booker does struggle, I mean, we've seen the last two games, the Suns get absolutely obliterated on most nights, and that's to be expected with this young roster and when Booker's off his game, but did you expect, I know without Bledsoe now, but losing by almost, they were down by 40 at Indiana, they were down by almost 30 at New York, just, I feel like we're reaching like a defining point in the season, so to say, because either it's going to continue to nosedive for the Suns, or it's going to somehow just like level out at some point, but how are you reading that? Because I feel like you said, these next 5 games are very winnable, but if they don't win them, if they continue to go on this losing streak, I feel like it really could have an effect on this young team.
Yeah, I guess I kind of worry about that to a certain extent. But I think, in a way, like, it's not great to say, but the team, a lot of young players are used to losing, you know what I mean? It's not as if they had success. And the success that they had earlier this year, around 500 under Triano and getting some nice road wins, which I think that, you know, not, this isn't to say that they won't be able, that they don't have that potential anymore. Nothing drastic has changed at the roster. Tyler Ulis stopped playing as well, and Marquese Chris got injured. That's really it. But they're still going to be able to be competitive in a lot of games. But I just think I'm not necessarily worried that the players will respond negatively because, you know, was last season better than this season?
Oh, no.
No, and we didn't really hear any reports of horrible attitude or anything from anyone last year. So I'm not too worried about that.
Real quickly, as far as the game goes, I know we said we're going to move on to some draft talk and then talk a little about the Houston game, but is there anything specific you wanted to touch on as far as last night goes?
Not really. I just think, again, to hit on that rotation thing with Monroe, I think that we should really be hoping for Len and Chandler to return as soon as possible. I think that they'll look a lot better as soon as that happens. But did you watch Trae Young and Colin Sexton today?
I did. And we also got a peek. We both, Brent and I, were watching the game on ESPN, and they flashed over to the media section. And Pat Connolly, the assistant Suns GM, was in attendance there. So the Suns had some representation to see Sexton versus Young. What's your quick takeaways? Because I know you update a mock draft recently. You're going to have another one on fan side here soon. How did Sexton look to you? Because I know in that first half, his length and really seemed to bother Trae Young, but Young really settled down and looked a lot like an NBA point guard today as far as playmaking goes.
Yeah, Young, I think he's obviously struggled shooting the ball. I would expect that. I mean, I don't see any reason why that wouldn't continue for most of the rest of the year until someone else on the roster steps up consistently, because key in on him that way, then he can shoot 30 times like he did against Oklahoma State, or he's gonna, or the team's gonna struggle because there's not offensive talent. They have shooters, they have shooting, they spread the floor well, and I think his name is McNeese, who comes off the bench, but he's kind of an out of control athlete type of player at this point. I think he's an underclassman still, and he hasn't been able to stay on the court, hasn't earned a starting job. So I would expect that they're going to continue. It's going to kind of be that format for the rest of their season until someone steps up, because you saw against Kansas, a couple players got hot, and then they won with Young making plays for the rest of the team, but today it wasn't enough because Sexton was scoring really well and success on offense overall, and then shots outside of Young. So I don't know how much of a knock that is on him as a prospect, but it was nice to see that Sexton was able to take over on the other side and lead out. And that was a surprising win regardless, because I just think even though Alabama or Oklahoma might not have that much supporting talent, Alabama definitely doesn't either.
Yeah, the thing is with Sexton, I know you're more into I'm more into the comparisons than you are, but just real quickly watching Sexton this year, I feel like getting a read on him early, does he kind of strike you as a guy that's almost like a John Wall or like a Kemba Walker type of guy that's going to hopefully develop that perimeter shot, but he's one of the best as far as driving to the lane and getting to the hoop?
Yeah, I think nobody's as athletic or fine as Derrick Rose was when he came out, but I think I feel similarly about him as Rose, just like you're saying, that finishing ability. Just he's really strong when he gets over there. Like, he doesn't struggle like you would expect a freshman to when he gets stopped at the rim by a defense, and he's able to finish over guys, he's able to draw fouls, he shoots at Rose. And I think he's a better shooter than Rose was in college. So I'm not quite as high just because I don't think he's necessarily shown a ton as a passer, and his defense comes and goes because they really don't ask him to play defense very much. But he's going to be a good scorer.
We don't touch on a lot on this podcast because we think that Sexton's probably around like a 6 to 10 range as far as prospect goes, and really with the Suns more in line at the top five, we haven't really focused on as much compared to the other point guards like Luka Doncic and Trae Young. But as far as the fit with Phoenix goes, how does Sexton look with you? Because to me, it's really intriguing on the surface to have a guy that can really drive and kick and have that potential and be a guy that gets to the rim a lot and takes that pressure off of Booker. But and like we said before, our secondary ball handler, maybe Sexton and Booker splitting time makes some sense. But how does that fit look to you on the surface? Because to me, I think Sexton's a good consolation prize if in the lottery they drop a little bit and they can't get younger Doncic. But I think for me, I think Young and especially Doncic are a lot better fits for this roster.
The main reason that I agree with you is that Young and Doncic both project to be able to play more successfully off the ball. Obviously, if Young can translate the success he's had pulling up for threes, and I mean, he shoots well, but most of his shots are coming off the dribble from three this year. If he can become a good shooter, I don't know why he wouldn't be able to do that. Then he's a lot of sense next to Booker, and they can both handle the ball and they can both shoot. And Doncic, for similar reasons, he's a good spot-up shooter and obviously can play all the way down to the wing positions if needed. So both of them maybe make a little bit more sense. But one thing on Sexton's side is that he bring the ball up and initiate the offense every time down the floor. That's not how Alabama plays. They play much more of a typical college movement side to side, posting and reposting kind of system that might, it kind of is not as exciting to watch sometimes, but that does get a little bit more excited about what Sexton could do playing off the ball.
I think Sexton's going to be a dynamic scorer on the next level, but I think if the Suns somehow drop some spots in the lottery to like 6 to, I don't think maybe even 6, maybe even like 7 to 11, he makes a lot of sense there. But I think obviously I think we're both high on Doncic and Young as far as better fits with the roster. But any final thoughts from the Young-Sexton matchup today? Because I think it opened up a lot of eyes as far as Young and Sexton goes.
Not defend Colin Sexton, just as a last note, individually, if you were worried, and you should have been, about Trae Young's defense, isolation defense like that, he's going to, I would hope, get a lot bigger. He's a freshman, and I believe he's a younger freshman, and obviously you can look at him and see that he's not grown into his body yet, but as of right now, Colin Sexton's not even that big of a guy, and he had no chance, and he wasn't even really so much on offense, he wasn't even able to really put that much energy into playing defense. So that's a worry, but just the scoring and the different styles was kind of nice to see them play against each other and observe that.
Hey, real quick though, on Trae Young, since you brought it up, I know we've touched on a little while ago as far as the fit on the roster alongside Booker, but if they do end up drafting Trae Young, which a lot of Suns fans really want them to do at this point, how does that fit go as far as defense? Because if you do start Trae Young and Devin Booker, that's a lot worse than even Dame and CJ McCollum in Portland. So I don't know how you could build a roster as far as front court protection around that. How would you go about doing that?
Yeah, I would imagine if you that you're going to be investing more resources into positions 3, 4, and 5 defensively. That's free. Maybe that's in free agency. Maybe that's a different mindset as far as if you feel like you have scoring. Maybe Josh Jackson's role on the team changes a little bit, but time it would be a sign to me if they were to target Young that they probably felt the progress that Bender and Jackson and Chris had made as defenders, because you're going to really need those guys to step up on that end. It's possible. I mean, we're one of the top defensive teams in the league early this year, and they sustained that for quite a while, and they're still toward the top half, I think. And it's not impossible. You just need really, really top-notch defense from other positions. It's a risk for sure, but I don't think with the talent Young has on offense, it would be necessarily, I think, it's the right to want a guy with that generation shooting and passing.
Definitely. I think going, if you're going to go that route, I think something that makes a lot of sense is taking your guy Troy Brown out of Oregon with the Miami pick and then maybe overpaying for a guy like Clint Capella in free agency. I think that makes a lot of sense. They're going to go the Trae Young route. But real quickly, I want to touch on two more prospects before we go into the Houston preview, and also we'll touch on a little bit on the Memphis game and the news they have with Mike Conley today. But as far as Mohamed Bamba and Jaren Jackson Jr. go, I wrote an article on those guys earlier this week, and we saw Mo Bamba had another big game today alongside the Trae Young game. They were going on simultaneously. Bamba had 24 points, 10 rebounds, I believe. Maybe it was 14 rebounds, and then 4 blocks. So Mo Bamba is really running in the form of his past 5 games. He's shooting 40% from 3. 80%+ from the free throw line. So what's your thoughts on Bamba and also Jaren Jackson Jr. in a Suns roster? Because for me, I think those guys make a lot of sense as far as what James Jones was saying a lot in that exclusive Bright Side of the Sun interview, which was versatility is the name of the game in today's NBA.
It's hard to tell which one of those I like more. I think Jackson's offensive style is just very confusing reason. Tom Izzo uses him in really crazy ways sometimes. He'll have him run off of like pin down screens and shoot threes, which is wild to watch him come on the other end and just smash a block into the stands. But I don't know if that's necessarily what he'll be doing in the NBA. And then when he does get the ball in the post, he faces up a lot and tries to drive, and he's not really that efficient doing that. Takes mid-range shots, even though he has the range to shoot threes. They don't really run pick and roll, like traditional pick and roll, so much where he's able to catch lobs or anything like that, which I would imagine he'd be doing. So that's harder to read. I think Bamba's playing more like he will in the NBA, and so that's easier to tell, and he's doing it so well recently that I think I've kind of grown on him a little bit more. But I also think, I'm sure you've been talking about Jaren Jackson all year. It's like the gifts he has as a player. There's not really a lot of guys more exciting in the whole draft.
Yeah, the versatility Jaren Jackson would offer as far as defense, and especially I think offensively, I think he's, like you said, a little bit reduced under Tom Izzo right now. I think his role would change a lot in a pro system. But real quickly on Bamba, since you brought that up, I mean, I think I brought up before on this podcast is I think Bamba's probably the unicorn of this draft if he hits his full potential as far as two-way potential goes. But I'm imagining like building a roster around if they did select Bamba, let's say number three, like Draft Express did have. So we can touch on that a little bit too. Draft Express also had Mo Bamba going to the Suns at number three overall in the latest update over Trae Young and MPJ, for example. But I think if you did go the Bamba route, if you're Phoenix, that really opens up a lot of doors as far as defensive versatility and also having a guy that can really, like a guy like Josh Jackson and Marquese Chris defensively would help a lot alongside Bamba too, because that gives you a rim protector and also really two possibly elite weak side rim protectors in Jackson and Chris. It
makes a lot of sense. I think Bamba even more just based on how much we've heard from this front office and coaching staff, really everybody in this organization just can't stop talking about versatility and, you know, multi-positionality and just being able to slide through and have really positionless types of schemes. And so that obviously Bamba makes a lot of sense, kind of the last line of defense in there, but the versatility he has guarding smaller players in space and then also obviously shooting threes. So that one makes a lot of sense to me, and I wouldn't be surprised. I think I had him going to Phoenix in one of the mock drafts, I think the most recent one, if I'm not mistaken. But just to mention too, today's been a cool, crazy, good day in college basketball, and Marvin Bagley, 13 of 18, 2 of 4 from 3, 30 points, 14 rebounds. Duke to lose to Virginia, but Virginia was the second-ranked team in the country. They've been really good this year, too. So Bagley did not miss the opportunity to show out on big prospect day either.
Hey, with Bagley, since you also brought that up, 30 and 14 for the Tempe, Arizona native, and I know me and you are both not high on the prospect of Bagley as far as his fit in Phoenix with Chris and Bender on the roster, but with what Chris and Bender haven't shown so far, do you think maybe Bagley usurps those guys as far as his overall talent? Let's say the Suns land at like 4 or 5 or maybe even 3 if they're that high on Bagley and they take him. What does that say about the future direction of the Suns? Because I think Bagley does make a lot of sense as far as elite talent goes. I think he's going to be a really good player, but if you're going to build a roster around Bagley and Booker and also Jackson, it makes a lot of sense. But really, if you're going to do that, at least really Chris and Bender in a bind, right?
Yeah, I think that's exactly why this draft is interesting for the Suns, because it could go the route of take somebody like Sexton or Bamba, where they're not really up. They slide into this program. They, you know, they start camp as the presumptive starter and then off to the races next year. But there's also the potential for somebody like Porter or somebody like Bagley to get drafted where it becomes a little bit more complicated. Even Doncic would kind of complicate things a little bit, where guys eventually somebody – there's going to have to be a pecking order on the team, and I think you're kind of already seeing that come into place where Tyler Ulis was kind of the gold boy after, you know, a game winner last year, and, oh, wow, this one's really hit on a second rounder, and he's fading a little bit, right, at least at this point in the season. So I would expect those hard decisions to come up even more in the summer, and the draft – this year's draft with just the talent where is going to be kind of a – I don't know. Kind of, I mean, it's exciting, but going to be really interesting just to see the all directions they could go. But that's exactly why I think, like you're saying.
Yeah, to that point, I haven't been around the Suns as long as you have. You've lived in Phoenix, I believe, your entire life, if I'm not mistaken. I'm from Indiana, so
yeah.
I've been watching the Pacers and following them for a while before I moved here. But as far as the Suns goes, is this upcoming summer, is this one of the most interesting summers as far as from a Suns perspective goes? Because I think outside the 7 seconds or less here, this has to be one of the most important, right?
Yeah, I mean, those were different just because they're building and it's just, you know, what can they add? Who are they going to get? How's the team going to look a little bit different next year? Obviously, it wasn't the summer, but the trade Shaq was a big one. That was, you know, that wasn't really the same situation either. That was more of the downswing of an era. Same with summer where we traded Steve Nash. That was more, you know, the end of something rather than the beginning of it. So this summer, you know, very interesting just because there's so many directions and so much uncertainty, but also I think a fair bit of optimism. So I think, you know, the reason we're probably thinking about this is because they're starting to lose games pretty badly and it's looking like, okay, well, we're back to tanking mode a little bit more than we were, and start looking at the draft and start looking at, you know, what kinds of opportunities the young players on the current roster can get till the end of the year. But I can't wait. I'm excited. It's not as excited to watch the games as evidenced by the Knicks blowout last night, but it's going to make things a little bit more fun and interesting for the rest of the year, I think.
Oh, that's 100% correct there, Brennan. I think one final thought here before we go into our quick previews of this road trip coming up is another one of my hypotheticals I always bring up, and that's as far as the scenarios go, let's say the lottery was today, and I'm really intrigued by your answer on this because for me, I do have Bagley number 3 on my board still, but as far as fits go in Phoenix, he's not really in my top 5. Maybe I think he's number 5 as far as fits go. If you, between the 3 forwards we discussed so far, not including Mike Porter Jr. because he's a different story as far as a wing player, but Jaren Jackson Jr., Mohamed Bamba, and Marvin Bagley, 1 through 3, if you're in a Phoenix Suns position, how would you rate those guys as far as who should we draft?
So it's Porter, Jackson, and Bamba?
Jaren Jackson Jr., Mohamed Bamba, okay. And Marvin Bagley.
Oh, Bagley. Okay. Yeah, I would have Bagley last, I think. And then I think I would have Bamba first. So Bamba, Jackson, Bagley. I agree with just because I think not only does Bagley overlap with Chris positionally, but I think he also overlaps with TJ Warren as far as it would be interesting to see how they play together. They kind of use the same areas of the court quite a bit, and until Bagley becomes a great three-point shooter, I don't think that he's going to be used as like a pick-and-pop guy. He's going to be posting up and you know, face up and pick-and-roll looks, and that's going to be kind of cramp things for Warren a little bit. So I just think, you know, they're on another team. Bamba, on the other hand, seems like a really solid fit in Phoenix.
Yeah, for me, I think I'm going to rate it probably Bagley at 3. And then right now I'm very close between Triple J and Bamba because I used to have Triple J a little lower, but I think over his last week or so, he's really started to show his versatility on both ends a lot more. And that's really intrigued me because he's shooting consistently 40% this season. And that's, if you're looking for a modern floor spacer who can be an elite rim protector, I mean, Jackson offers that in spades. So it's going to be really interesting to see how Triple J's stock goes over the next few months. And also, like we said, Bamba and Bagley, because if you're going to be losing, this is the year to do it, because I think maybe, I don't know about 2019 or 2020, but compared to the last few drafts, I think 2018 is definitely the cream of the crop or the last 3 or 4 years goes. But we're going to bounce real quick to our previews of this road trip coming up. The Suns have a real quick 2-game road trip this weekend at Houston and at Memphis on Monday night. So I think we expect the worst with Houston because the first 2 times they played, it's been an absolute massacre. And I probably expect the same as far as that goes at the Toyota Center tomorrow. But what's your thoughts on how that's going to go?
Yeah, I think it's going to be more of the same. Harden's healthy. Paul's healthy. I see no reason why it would be anything other than a blowout again. I mean, that's just the truth. It's been a blowout every time. That team is way better than the Suns. Has a lot more to be playing for, and they're gunning for the number one seed. The Suns don't even know who the starting point guard's going to be. So I think we're both on the same page there. And then Memphis, it's been pretty entertaining games, actually, the past couple times those teams have played, and Memphis's offense has been a little bit better recently. So I wouldn't be surprised if that one's a little more competitive, a little bit more interesting to watch, and
I'm not really going to touch on the Houston game on another point because I think we agree on that. I think it's going to be pretty out of hand pretty fast. I'd probably say in the first 6 or so minutes like it has been the last two times. But to the point on Memphis, we saw Michael Conley. He's out for the season. He had to get surgery. GM Chris Wallace announced that today, and Woj tweeted out. So the tank race has officially added Memphis to it. So I believe that's 6 or 7 teams now vying for that top pick. So how does Memphis go about this now? Because from a team building standpoint, Conley's out for the year now. They have to trade Marc Gasol, right? If they want to just go full tank.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like they're going to, though. They haven't really made it seem like they're interested in doing that. So, I mean, he has the rest of the year to get back into shape, like physically, but into form. He's been not his self this year at all. And as far as tomorrow night goes, Tyreke Evans has been able to shred the Suns defense just like every scoring type of guard has. Victor Oladipo is perfect example, and I would expect that Monday that would continue for him, and he has a long way for just to kind of project the future for Memphis. That's going to start with probably a trade of Tyreke Evans to get him on a good team and get the Grizzlies some extra losses. So he's probably going to have some extra reason to play his butt off the next couple of weeks and get put in a better situation. So I would expect, as far as it relates to the Suns, that might not be me.
Yeah, I think at this point, I don't know what to expect with the Suns because we've seen them have some surprising wins like they did at Denver, but most of the time it has been blowout after blowout, and they have now lost 8 of the last 10, and they're facing the toughest schedule across the league over the next 3 months. So it's going to be interesting to see. I think they currently are number 5 as far as the 5th-worst team in the NBA. And I think they're only 2 games out of the worst spot. So it's going to be really interesting to see how this next couple weeks goes for the Suns, because at this point, they've had back-to-back losses, and going against Houston tomorrow, it's probably going to be 3 in a row. So it's going to be really, really intriguing to see how this team goes about trying to find their groove and their mojo at this point to try to just stay together. So we'll talk to you guys tomorrow after the Houston game. And until then, we'll see you guys later.